Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the withholding voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, indeed. What a morning it is. In fact, not a great morning, let's be honest. The conditions have been horrendous this weekend. Slightly better as we look out. In fact, for anyone that wants to know, we're in a room with the tiniest little windows that you could ever imagine. It's effectively a little box room, very little light that comes in it. But what I can see, it does look like there might be some blue sky.
I feel like it's one of those crisp mornings that you don't get anywhere else but in England, this fine country in which we dwell.
Well, I know you really get quite excited about these crisp mornings. I'm not quite so fond of them myself. I prefer a warm morning, a balmy morning. Is that the word? Balmy?
Can be, yeah.
Let's do it. Anyway, we're going way off topic. So, withholding, because?
Because I'm going to let GKU listeners into some behind-the-curtain chats that we have here at GKU Towers.
Can't tell them that.
How lucky they are.
I told you that was confidential.
But we were having a chat the other day, and it just popped out from you, unprompted, that you were a big player of Championship Manager back in the day, in Premier League, not Premier Manager.
It was Premier Manager before that, then it was Championship Manager.
Yeah, Premier Manager was the forerunner, wasn't it, for Championship Manager. And you just suddenly blurted out the fact that you had a goalkeeper called Paul Hyde that you used to always pluck from the conference or the lower leagues because he was really good in that game.
Yeah.
Yet when we had the podcast last week, you made out like you'd never heard of that guy, like I was some alien talking about a goalkeeper from far, far away.
I did that just because it was you. But no, the goalkeeper, I didn't feel it was that interesting at the time. But yes, I used to love Premier Manager. I used to be one of those where, because you had to start in the conference from memory. So Paul Hyde was always above the level from memory. This is a little bit geeky, but he had a rating of 42, when my average was about 30, 32 with the players. So to have a goalkeeper come in of a rating 42, then it was bringing in certain Wickham players. You knew the name of one, actually. Go on, what was it?
Keith Scott, the striker.
Keith Scott, that was it. He was 58. I mean, you bring him in at that level and I would break the bank for him and you'd soon climb up the levels. So, yeah, I don't think it was particularly interesting, to be honest, but hey, we've started a podcast with it now.
We have. We've dedicated an entire section to it, and it's geeky goalkeeping goodness, which is what this podcast is all about, Richard. There are Championship Manager players right now buzzing at what you're saying. The fact that you know the rating of the player.
Yeah. There you go. If you are listening, Mr. Hyde, congratulations. I'm sure that I wasn't the only one. I think he was quite a popular choice back then. That seemed to happen through the years. There was always a goalkeeper, always a player. In fact, I had one year. I do remember a lot of people told me there was one particular year that I was quite good on. Was it Championship Manager? I'm trying to think, because it evolved, didn't it, into several different things.
Well, it was Championship Manager and like CM2, CM3, and then it was the year, and then it became Football Manager, which it now is.
Right. So whenever the might have been Football Manager, whatever the transition was, I went from being not very good to suddenly really good to not very good again very quickly, unfortunately. But there was one particular season of the game or year of the game when I was actually the one to buy. I was kind of the next best thing, but it didn't quite work out in real life, unfortunately.
Well, isn't that because there was a slight bias? And listen, absolute impartiality from the creators of Football Manager, but Miles Jacobson is heavily involved, isn't he? And he's a big Watford fan.
He is. I did a show with him recently.
Oh, recently?
Recently, yeah.
I did one many moons ago with him.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, really are going off on tangents here, aren't we? But yes, he was a big Watford fan, which probably helped my cause. Although the fact that then I dropped off the edge of a cliff, maybe he instantly took a disliking to me. I'm not sure.
Oh, wouldn't be the first Watford fan.
Very true.
Certainly not the
very,
last.
Very quickly.
We've got plenty coming up, Richard, but there is some correspondence from one person who responded to our Richard Wright plea. Do you remember that?
Go on.
A couple of weeks ago now, it's probably completely gone from your
memory of a goldfish.
Richard Wright, the debut cap for England, remember?
Two penalties conceded.
Yes.
Yes.
One off his, which this person, Richard Masterton is the person that's emailed us in.
Okay.
And said, Richard Wright, the England cap, it was indeed Malta So I was correct. I'm happy with that. Correct.
I went San Marino.
Afterwards, I thought, was it Gibraltar? One of the altars. So yeah, we got there.
Indeed. Again, there. Fascinating. Fascinating stuff.
But Robert has asked a question as well. It's quite a good point he's made here. So we're going to have a bit of Richard Wright business going on now, because he mentioned the two penalties, one coming off his head, the other being saved. He mentioned the fact there were it was 1 year between his caps as well. So he played against Malta and then played against Holland a year later in that 2-0 defeat. He came off the bench for David James, I believe. And he then goes on to say that Richard Wright played more than 500 games in his career, or close to, 500 games in his career, more than half of those coming in the first 6 years of his career. He then says, after moving to and then leaving Arsenal, his career never really got going again. Yes, he played for Everton immediately, but bar one season of being the regular number one in 2002-03, he only ever managed one more season of more than 20 league games. That was back at Ipswich in 2008-09. He left for Arsenal when he was 23. I'm sure he'll be happy with his career. Very few goalkeepers can lay claim to playing twice for their country. But why did he never really fulfil that potential he promised at Ipswich? And will he be happy with his career?
Oof, what a question
that is. Great email,
really,
isn't it?
Really good question. And he's one that I feel like I can give a bit of information on, because he was a bit of a hero of mine. I think I might have told you this. Poster of Richard Wright up on my wall as a 12-year-old. This is true. Everyone else had very different types of posters on their wall. But
real goalkeeping heartthrob.
Yes, I had Richard Wright up on my wall. And I did watch him several times when he was younger. I do remember him playing, I've told this story, I'm sure, but for Ipswich in a cream kit, really nice cream kit back in the day against Watford. I think Ipswich came away winners, but it just seemed like week after week he was the hero, making save after save. He was a massive inspiration as well. The fact that I took parts of his game and tried to adapt them into my own game. And it was a huge rise, a very quick rise at Ipswich. And I agree, he made his move to Arsenal. And you do look back and wonder, because at the time, it looked very much like he was going to go on and be England goalkeeper for however long. You know, it really did look that way. Loved the style in which he played. Played with real confidence at the time. Distribution was above and beyond a lot of others. And for whatever reason, it never quite clicked at Arsenal. I remember a couple of errors early on. Didn't quite nail down the starting place. Was a bit part player, I'd say, at best. And then obviously eventually made his move to Everton. Even that, I do remember in his debut, a goal going in that maybe he could have done a little bit better with. And again, never quite got that momentum. And I do wonder how much of a part that plays. You know, we're going to talk, no doubt, about Aaron Ramsdale again in this pod and several others. And, you know, you look at Aaron Ramsdale now, who's got off to a flying start at Arsenal, and you win everybody over early on. Does that then give you the momentum to kick on? You know, maybe it can be one or two things that go against you that just put you on a slightly different path and make it that little bit more difficult to win the fans over to and really get into your stride. Because certainly it's fair to say he had a very good career. I mean, come on, you play for England and you play in the Premier League. It's a very, very good career. At the age of 21, 22, would he have expected slightly better? I don't know. It's tough, isn't it? I think at that point, when everybody's saying he's going to play 50, 60, 70 games for England and he ends up with just the two, then perhaps, I just think that's so harsh. You know, he's played for Arsenal, he's played for Everton, he's played for England. So, of course, it has to go down as a very good career.
It does, yeah. But the fact that he, and we all know this about Richard Wright, and he started his, he made his first appearance. I was having a look after this email. He made his first appearance in 1994. He was 17. That was the year that Ipswich went down from the Premier League, the 9-0 defeat against Manchester United season. He played, or he was contracted as a pro until 2016. Obviously, he was with Man City for a long time, wasn't he? As a number 3, 4, 5, whatever it may be. But the fact that he was 23 when he left for Arsenal, I didn't realise as well, only one season at Arsenal. So they signed him for one season, $2 million, and then he went the following campaign. I thought he was there for longer. It's funny what you forget, isn't it? But 23, I mean, that is so young for your career to eventually begin to peter out.
I guess this could be the argument as well as to a goalkeeper's timeline and when to make certain moves, you know. And if we were to use some examples at the moment of goalkeepers that are playing at the very, very top, who you could argue have done it the right way, where they've almost climbed the levels bit by bit by bit, and maybe that is the right way to do it. And perhaps now the argument is you wouldn't see a goalkeeper go from the likes of an Ipswich in the Championship, as they were at the time, to a Premier League club like Arsenal to be a number one goalkeeper. It just doesn't happen. It almost seems like there's steps in between that. So it was such a big jump. Maybe it's that. Maybe in hindsight, had the move have been to a club slightly lower where he would have been the outright number one, had he made several mistakes or not, wouldn't have been too much of an issue. Maybe that would have been right. I mean, you could look at other similar examples. Ben Foster's a good example. Obviously went to Man United, and you look now and think Ben could comfortably have played for Man United for 10 seasons or so. But the time that he did was maybe just a touch too early. Had that been a season or two later and it had a season at West Brom or Birmingham or wherever it might have been, and then he went to Man United, maybe he would have been ready. Maybe it was just one step too soon, going from Watford, who were low-end Premier League at the time, or Championship, to Manchester United, who were, of course, up the top.
Okay, well, thank you, Robert Masterton, for that email. If you'd like to get in touch with us, goes without saying, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, 07503 673020. I'd love to say you can tweet us, and maybe some people have been trying to, but yet again, Twitter, in all their wisdom, have deemed us unfit for their platform, Richard.
Do we know why?
Because I believe it was a clip from, I don't know, a few years ago of a clip from 10 years ago that apparently is not allowed on Twitter, that we were completely unaware or just forgotten that we'd put out on a whim. Yet, if you're racist or homophobic or any other kind of prejudice, that's fine. Mm. You can stay on Twitter. Mm. Unbelievable.
But putting out footage from 15 years ago, absolute no-go.
Positive goalkeeping stuff. No, we're not having that. You are suspended. So we are yet again suspended, completely out of our control. We are trying to get our platform, or our handle, I should say, reinstated. So we'll let you know, shall we?
Good stuff. Sounds good to me.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Commentary corner. So we're starting with a bit of a bang, Richard, or a bit of a rant. Are you aware, Richard Lee, that goalkeepers are overprotected? Did you know that?
It's a fact. It's a fact. We all know that that's the case, Matthew. Why do you say?
Well, I was just watching Gillette Soccer Saturday over the weekend. Jeff Stelling was commenting on the game between Leeds and Watford, and there was an error by Ian Melier, and it was Michael Dawson, the ex-Tottenham defender, who did say he thought the goalkeeper had had a howler, or maybe he had a howler in not realising that it wasn't a goal that should have been awarded for Watford, but was taken away from Watford. Jeff Stelling said, "I thought the goalkeeper just dropped the ball. End of story. But you know what it's like. Goalkeepers get huge protection." So there we go, case number one from the weekend. And then I was watching Match of the Day on Saturday evening, Richard. Quite the life I have on a Saturday. Gary Lineker, this was for the incident involving Tim Krul on Matty Vidra, which wasn't given as a penalty in Norwich and Burnley's draw at Turf Moor. They were watching the replay afterwards, and Gary Lineker, "It's quite vicious, isn't it? I mean, keepers are overly protected. We know that. We've always thought that."
I know what you're doing here. You just drop that grenade in here, ready for me to go. I mean, the bit, of course, that then goes after this is then when the goalkeeping pundit comes on and bites back, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The
goalkeeping expert came on, which was, that's right, no one on any panel at all this weekend was a goalkeeper at all. Nothing. Now, it's just that, for me, it's just the comment where it is a matter of fact. That's the bit that bugs me. We know they're over. It's like me saying, well, we know that a striker does nothing until the last year of their contract, and then suddenly they score a load of goals, so they get a new contract. We know that's the case. We know that's a fact. But maybe in his first year, he can actually do something worthwhile. Like, such nonsense. No, you don't know that they're overprotected. And actually, we're going to talk about that incident in particular, because they're all missing the point, completely missing the point. And this is why I watch so many games on mute now, because a lot of the time when it comes to goalkeeping, it is such nonsense. They're missing the entire point, which is, yes, it doesn't look great because it's a fist, but a fist is the equivalent of a head or a foot. It's a part of the body that a goalkeeper is allowed to use. So if it was a clash of heads and two players go for it and it's a 50-50, it's a clash of heads. If it's a fist and a head, a 50-50, it's exactly the same thing. It might look a bit worse because effectively you're punching him in the face, but it's exactly the same thing. And they all miss that because they're not able to see the perspective, which matters.
Gary Lineker did allude to the incident involving Danilo and Hugo Lloris, didn't he, in the Euros between Portugal and France. That was given as a penalty after being reviewed by VAR. But both of these let's look at the two errors or the two incidents. Ian Melier, he dropped the ball and it was given as a foul from Troost Ekong on Liam Cooper, I think.
Yeah, nothing to do with him. Nothing to do with Melier whatsoever.
No, nothing. So nothing about overprotection.
They missed that completely. Yeah. But they used it as a point to make the fact that they're overprotected again. No, nothing. It was a mistake. The ball's crossed in, which, by the way, wasn't the only one we saw this weekend. We mentioned the weather conditions. Horrendous for goalkeepers. And we're going to talk about several where tough, tough handling conditions. And effectively, he's dropped the ball. So it was a mistake. And he was fortunate in that there was a foul on his teammate, as you mentioned.
But it wasn't really a foul. It should have been given.
Probably should have been given. But again, nothing to do with the goalkeeper. So actually, the comment on the goalkeeper was null and void.
And the Tim Krul one. So you're saying no penalty.
No penalty. No, for me, no penalty if it's a 50-50. Look, my point is, if the player does get there first, which some would argue that maybe he just gets there ahead of the goalkeeper, then yes, I get it. It's like any tackle. If someone gets there first and the other person comes in and makes a tackle, then of course it's a foul. If it's a 50-50 and they both crunch at the same time, then no, it's not a foul. The reason that the Lloris one in the summer was a foul was because he got there slightly late. And yes, if you don't quite get there first and they get their head to the ball first, in the same way that a penalty will be given if the striker gets there, kicks it a mile away, but then the keeper comes in and takes him out. Of course, it's a penalty. It just is what it is. The thing is, the pundits will always go a little bit overboard and they'll start to talk about serious foul play and whatever else. But how's it ever going to look good if you're coming for a punch and you miss your punch? Of course, if you do catch someone in the face, it's never going to look good, but it's not serious foul play. It's not like you're going out intentionally to punch them in the face.
I like the way you've chuckled every time you said that.
No, I can't help it. That's quite bad.
Boof.
It's almost, I was going to say it's almost an added bonus, but I've got to be careful what I say. Yeah. Yes, I've got to be careful. Yeah.
It's all goalkeepers primarily that listen to this podcast, yeah, so true. I think you're okay. Yeah. We're going to stay with that last game, Burnley 0, Norwich 0. And a word on Nick Pope, because not much has been mentioned about him so far this season. He was criticised a bit last week for rushing out on Jamie Vardy in that 2-2 draw. But a good save this week from a Matthias Norman free kick.
Yeah, very good. I like this for the fact that he lined the wall up in the way you should for a free kick, took up a good position, a true position, held his spot, and the ball then came his side and he made it look very comfortable because he did exactly as you should. Didn't try and guess, didn't go behind the wall, just stood there, good set position, set well, and then a very good save to his right-hand side and parries it into a good area. It's just a very assured save, doing the right things, correct decision, and making it look very easy.
Solid Pope save that, isn't it? Not in the England squad, though. No. Pickford, Johnston and Ramsdale. I was reading some of the quotes from Gareth Southgate, just one on this particular situation. Nick is, I still think, coming back from injury a little bit, but I think Aaron is just in a better vein of form at the moment. I thought it was interesting for him to reference Nick Pope's injury and to almost say, I think he's coming back from injury, but I'm not too sure. Yeah. It felt a bit like that.
It's a strange one for Nick Pope at this current point because, and of course, you've then got Sam Johnston, who was involved in the summer and has started the season reasonably well for West Brom, playing a completely different style of football. And I know one or two goals have been highlighted with him as well. So I think Nick Pope will feel a little bit hard done by. I can't help but feel this comes back to something that hasn't been referenced at all, which is Nick Pope is a very different style of goalkeeper than the three that are currently in the squad. And I did wonder whether Gareth Southgate might reference this. He hasn't. He's just gone with the fact that he's been injured and maybe not quite fully fit, which doesn't look to be true. He's played every game and he looks fully fit and he looks fine and he's playing reasonably well, I think. He mentioned one or two moments, but I think pretty much every goalkeeper's had one or two moments. So I think he'll feel very hard done by not to be in this squad, given that he was effectively the outright two prior to the Euros and he's seemingly now dropped to fourth.
The other game from that commentary corner was Leeds 1, Watford 0. Now, you just mentioned this now. You mentioned it on Saturday morning as well, that we might see more goals than usual because of the conditions. We saw it with Melier. We then saw it with Ben Foster in the same game. And we also saw it with Aaron Ramsdale in the late game between Brighton and Arsenal.
Yeah, all slightly different, but all with similarities. The Aaron Ramsdale I'll mention because, again, the narrative at the moment is hugely positive and rightly so. He's been very, very good since he's gone there. And there was some great stuff in this game as well. But this was one where it's whipped in. It's a horrible, horrible one to deal with. And he did what I would have done, which is he has purposefully tried to pat the ball down. You know, ball whipped in on the angle. He hasn't tried to hold it. He's tried to do what Peter Schmeichel used to do it a lot, actually, a little pat down onto the floor, and then you take it on the second attempt. The problem was, of course, as he's patted it down, an opposition player's come in, got the challenge in, at which he goes down like he's been poleaxed.
He could have been seriously injured. It was quite a strong challenge, but I just kind of felt the way he flopped his arm down afterwards to be like, I'm really hurt here. I'm out. I'm just out cold. And yeah, he absolutely wasn't.
He was fine.
Yeah,
I've done that myself. I think the moment you realise you've lost control of the ball, you've got a decision to either get back up and get back into play or do what he did. Interestingly, we're going to talk about Jose Sarr in a bit. And actually, I think Jose Sarr should have done exactly what Aaron Ramsdale did. I think if Jose Sarr does that, I think that goal isn't given, or I think plays stop for a head injury. So no, Aaron Ramsdale's just checked out at that moment. He's head in the floor. I'm knocked out as far as anyone's concerned. Please stop the play so that we can then recover and go again. But it was slightly amusing, but going back to the point, I do think it's a very, very tough ball to deal with. I think that to try and hold that ball when it's whipped in, wet, greasy, I don't think many goalkeepers are able to hold that genuinely. And I know outfield players will listen in and think that's a crazy comment to make, but I've been there and we've all been there. And then you'd argue, well, do you try and punch it? Even that's quite risky when it's whipped in, and then everyone will question why you've punched it. So you have to try and hold it, but it's just such a difficult skill to do under pressure like that. And in the end, he did get away with it to an extent that when the ball broke, of course, it then was fired over the bar. Melier was, I would argue, a slightly easier ball that was whipped in. He'll be frustrated that he dropped it. And again, luckily for him, he got away with it as well, given, as we mentioned, there was a foul. And the Ben Foster, I think, was the hardest one, that he did actually hold it. And it's as he's coming down, there's someone in the way and he's kind of knocked into them, which has meant that he's dropped the ball. David Raya had a very similar one as well, actually. I watched that game live and very similar. Caught the ball, and as he's come down to land, he's put his hands on Antonio, which has caused him to then drop the ball. Antonio did nothing wrong, and he was saying to the referee, how's that a foul? I'm literally just stood there. And actually, he had a bit of a point. But at the same time, David Raya only dropped the ball because Antonio was there. So several situations this weekend that all had similarities, and I've got no doubt that the weather this weekend played a huge factor in the fact that we did see several of those.
Made a good save late on, Aaron Ramsdale, in that game with Brighton. Another clean sheet for him. There were some comments that have come out from Bernd Leno. He's been speaking to Sport Bild in Germany, so another classic case of speaking to someone outside of your country and the quotes just happening to be on the internet and us all seeing them. I don't know whether we read too much into this, but he was talking about the fee. He was asked, obviously, about the fee for Aaron Ramsdale. The sum may seem high in Germany, he said, but here, as strange as it sounds, it's almost normal. He then goes on to explain the situation where he is now number two. There was no clear reason, he said, why I was out, but it had nothing to do with my performance. He is the trainer, he decides. I'm sure he's talking about Arteta there. Of course, it's difficult for me. He then goes on to speak about his future. London is very nice. Milan is not bad either, and closer to my home, Stuttgart. But I'm not seriously thinking about that yet. I feel comfortable at Arsenal and in London. Only if nothing changes in my situation by winter would I have to think about things. What option do I have? How can I continue? But I'm concentrating on my work and training. I can't commit to anything else at the moment.
Okay, well, there you go. No, I think it's one at the moment. He can't have too many complaints because, as you mentioned, I thought on the whole, again, Aaron Ramsdale was very, very good. And he is playing, we keep saying it, but with a real positive energy about him. The save that he did make that you referenced, one of my favourite saves this weekend, in that it probably doesn't go down as a save because actually the ball was headed back across the box. So I'm sure on the stats that won't go down as a shot on target. But the way in which he's read the situation, the power he showed, you know, there's a lovely shot from behind the goal where you see him at full stretch, and it's not an easy one to get to, but he absolutely has to get there. Otherwise, it is a nailed on goal. Brilliant reading of the game, very, very sharp in his movements. It's really powerful and great technique to get it away.
We'll just reference Robert Sanchez as well, because Brighton's tally of 8 clean sheets in Premier League home matches this calendar year is exceeded only by Manchester City and Chelsea, who each have 9. I saw that stat.
Yeah, and he's just looking more and more solid with every game. Without necessarily making the world-class saves that we know that he's very much got in his locker, I just think that his general all-round game is becoming more and more solid by the week. And Brighton, certainly, when you look at that base that they've now got to build from, and Robert Sanchez being a big part of that, you can't help but feel it's going to be a successful season for them.
Liverpool 2, Man City 2, the battle of the Brazilians. Alisson and Edison love to see this fixture every time, not just for the spectacle that it always tends to be, but to see those two goalkeepers going head to head. Alisson, 2 saves from Phil Foden to keep the scores down at halftime. There's a pass from Edison, I believe you'd like to talk about. And also the opener from Sadio Mane. We've had a WhatsApp in from Under the Bar who says, I'm surprised to see the Mane goal beat Edison. I think his normal 1v1 style of attacking spread saves that one. Seemed to set to react for a shot, then changed his mind and went for a spread. What are your thoughts?
Interesting. See, I've watched this a few times, and it is exactly that he gets to a position, decides to hold, and then looks to execute the long barrier, looks to execute the spread, and he's kind of unlucky in that it does go between his hip, his arm, his leg, right in that little gap there that even when you do that spread, you do leave that very slight gap. So I don't think he's a million miles away with his positioning. I guess the argument is, could he get an extra yard further forward? He probably could. And if he does that give him slightly more chance? Well, of course, he's going to be a little bit closer to the ball. So in theory, that gives him a little bit more chance to make the save. I must say that we are nitpicking, of course, with something like that, because we're talking...
Great goal.
Yeah, phenomenal goal. And I think this is... I'm always wary to go into too much detail on this, in that I'm sure that is exactly the conversation that he'll be having with his goalkeeper coach, which is... And this is what you do when you sit down with your goalkeeper coach and you take emotion out of it completely and you try and nitpick and you look for those tiny little details that might make you that little bit better. This would be a situation where they would look at it and it might be something like that. But again... To delve too deeply into something like this, I just think we need to be a little bit careful because, and I've made this point before, but we'll get blamed for many, many things. So to perhaps attach blame here, I think would be the wrong thing to do. But yes, I do think he could get an extra yard further forward, slightly close to the ball.
And Gary Neville, heaping praise. Credit to goalkeepers. Jermaine Genus also said on Match of the Day 2, he did say that's the pass of the day from Edison. I mean... I know that we've said it over and over again, but absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, ridiculous. I mean, what I say, great that they're giving praise. They're effectively giving praise for something that they can give praise for because it's something they know, you know, although Gary Neville wasn't particularly great at passing, but you know what I'm saying? Like they're outfield players. So they do know how to comment on someone's distribution passing. But we spoke about it before, but the fact he can move it a yard and then boom it, 70, 80 yards. And this, the trajectory was just, it almost gathered pace. It was bizarre. I'm watching it in the air and it's got a slight bit of draw on it, I think. And to slot it in between the centre back and the right back into that gap to land where it did to put Foden in, it's just ridiculous. I don't think there's anybody else on the planet who can do what he just did, because I don't think anyone's got the raw power that he's got or the technique in order to get the ball that far, that quickly, with that precision. I'll go as far as to say that. There's nobody else on the planet that can play that pass.
We should reference Alisson as well. Good performance from him.
Yeah, excellent. You know, a couple of saves in particular. In fact, on that very ball, you know, he's then left with a decision. Do you come out and engage or do you stay deep? He decides to come out and actually does the right thing, stands up and ends up making a tackle effectively, which was very good goalkeeping to read the danger. Makes a good save on the angle. I thought his timing was excellent where he's come across to his right, got that extra step, and probably what we're saying about Edison, got that little bit closer. And as he spread, he's created a big barrier in order to make the save. I thought he was excellent all afternoon. And actually Edison, for the positive that we're speaking about with the distribution, did have a moment towards the end of the game where I'm sure he'd be very thankful. And this is where goalkeeping, as we know, sometimes you are reliant on others to save you. And that was very much the case. Decided to come for a cross, which is fine. I love the positivity. I love the fact he's trying to affect the game. Was never going to get the cross. The ball, of course, breaks. Should have been a simple finish. And it was an excellent tackle from Rodri, which... It's just funny how headlines could change. That goes in, and no doubt Edison would have been getting a little bit of stick, and no doubt he'd have been making some negative headlines today. And instead, we're on here, and everybody's talking about this incredible pass and a two-all draw and so on and so forth. But again, that's the life of a goalkeeper. Sometimes you make an error, you get away with it, and you still come out a bit of a hero, and sometimes it doesn't go your way, and you're very much the bad guy.
Speaking of incredible passes, Hugo Lloris too as well, very nearly assisted Harry Kane's first Premier League goal of the campaign, Tottenham beating Aston Villa, but no one really referencing this pass. This was Edison-esque to an extent.
Yeah, brilliant, very, very good. And I thought Martinez was very good as well, made a very good decision to decide to drop, thought about coming to engage, decided to drop, turned it into a one-on-one from the angle and made a very good save. I think had it have gone in, I'd like to have thought that they would have gone back and referenced the pass a little bit more, because it was something that at the time you didn't necessarily see being on. But once again, great trajectory on the strike. The accuracy, very, very impressive. And really, Harry Kane probably should have done a little bit better.
Okay, just a few more to wrap up the Premier League. Wolves 2, Newcastle 1. You referenced this earlier. Jose Sa, it was the Jeff Kendrick goal for Newcastle. This was another relatively humorous one, just because of the way he was scampering back across his goal, only for Kendrick to hit it back across him.
Yeah, well, I just wonder if he stays down, what happens? Because he's very brave on the one-on-one, comes out, makes a good save, and he is knocked in the head, you can see. So he's got a head injury, he's down. Credit to him, he tries to get up and he tries to recover, but he's never quite fully right, and you're a little bit shaken up. You can see he wasn't moving overly well, comes back, then the shot actually has half a chance to save it, but can't move his body quite to get his foot to it. So I just feel really sorry for him, and I do wonder what happens if he stays down. Does that then go to VAR? Does that then get chalked off because he's down with a head injury?
It's not a foul, though, is it? Joel Linton's gone in. It's 50-50.
It's 50-50 again. It's not. So then I suppose the question is, if your goalkeeper's out of play, what do the rules suggest? Perhaps nothing. Perhaps it is just a case of he'd have fired it into the empty net and everyone would have still gone a little bit crazy. In the end, of course, the fact that Wolves come back and won the game, it's not as much of a talking point as perhaps it would have been.
Chelsea 3, Southampton 1, West Ham United 1, Brentford 2. Incredible result for your former club. Let's just quickly talk about these two. Alex McCarthy so close to pulling off one of the saves of the season from Ben Chilwell just behind the line. And Lucas Fabianski with a similar scenario as well for Brentford's opener.
I was going to say exactly that. That's what I wrote in my notes.
Oh, there we go. Actually,
there you go. Two very, very similar situations and both incredibly unlucky. You know, Fabianski makes a brilliant save down low to his right, recovers quickly, great recovery line, predicts exactly what's going to happen next. And at first, I thought he'd made the save. And we're talking inches. And the same with McCarthy. I think the ball hit the post, didn't it? Then the bar, crazy passage of play. And again, good recovery line, sensed where the ball would likely end up, would likely go. And again, it looks like he's made a phenomenal recovery save. But of course, goal line technology. This is why we have it. It's why we have VAR. It's why we have goal line technology.
Not a problem with goal line technology.
Oh, you're okay.
You can't get me on that.
You're okay.
It's instantaneous.
Right.
Very good development in the modern game. You were talk sporting for the West Ham Brentford game.
I was indeed. What a game. Very interesting game. And in the end, Brentford coming out on top, and another very, very good performance from David Raya. In fact, both goalkeepers, I have to say, were excellent all afternoon. But I do enjoy watching David Raya play, and I think he's grown even more by being in the Premier League, being in this environment. You know, he is very much the quarterback back there. His range of distribution is excellent. The way in which he can manipulate the football is very impressive. Coming for crosses all afternoon, very much plays on the front foot. We spoke about this many times, and once again, he's produced a couple of very impressive saves. The first one probably isn't going in. It's a free kick over the wall that is probably hitting the bar, but of course, you need to get fingertips to it. Moves very quickly to his right. Good spring in order to get up there and get the fingertips to it. And then a very good save on the angle too, which is a case of him sensing danger, coming out towards the ball ever so slightly, creating a good shape. And in the end, he almost saves it with the inside of his foot and it goes wide of the post, which in the end, of course, were crucial saves given that Brentford went up the other end in the final minute and were able to get the victory.
Okay, Manchester United 1, Everton 1. Jordan Pickford, a good half-volley save. I like these ones. On the angle from Edison Cavani, that was a header. And David De Gea, good again, but you noticed something in his technique for the equaliser from Andros Townsend, his choice.
Yeah, I did. I mean, no error here whatsoever. Of course, it's a very, very good finish. The only point I'd make is I think you've got goalkeepers who choose different techniques at different times. Now, we know that David De Gea will always, or more than likely, always go with a foot if he can. You know, he's preferred that technique and he's used it very positively over the years. I just wonder with the goal whether that's one where you get set, hands that little bit lower, body weight forward, and you try and get down very quickly. The whole sack of spuds one. You know, get your feet out of the way, drop down, and you just get that little bit more reach, and maybe you might be able to get something to it. And I say that, and to be honest, he's one of many, many goalkeepers now that just don't utilize that technique. They would rather have a slightly more upright stance and almost do the splits in order to make the save, which, and again, I can't knock him because he does it so well, and he's done it so many times, and many saves that you make by doing that, you probably don't make by using the other technique that I spoke about. So again, no error. I think it's more just a case of a style of goalkeeping. And in the end, it was a very, very good finish. But to talk about the positives, very good save from David De Gea down to his right. Sharp, good strong hand, good area that he got it into. And Pickford's save, I thought, was superb. I thought the way in which he's moved back to his line, good set position, body weight forward. It's a good header from Cavani. Wasn't quite in the corner, but was only a yard or so from the post. And Pickford has to be so sharp to his right-hand side. And when it is on the half volley like that, it's so essential that you get a good hand to it. You know, it's very easy to maybe just get fingers to it and it still nestles in the corner. We've seen that many, many times. But he got a good hand to it and it flew round the post.
And lastly, a name we haven't spoken of much this season either, just like Nick Pope, Kasper Schmeichel. A double save from Wilfried Zaha and Conor Gallagher in Leicester's 2-2 draw at Palace.
Indeed, made them look very simple. Both saves, I think. And actually talking there about different techniques that keepers use, I think Kasper Schmeichel here is a great example of not necessarily needing to make it look more than it is, if that makes sense, because he's set, good set position, very neutral. Ball comes towards his feet. Now, rather than looking to collapse, he essentially just kicks it away, but it allows him then to move very quickly the other side. And once again, it's the same situation. And I think where you'll sometimes see goalkeepers, and I was probably guilty of this myself, in that when you make a save with your feet, you can almost collapse after it because you're like a coiled up spring. You're ready to go. Ball comes in near your feet. You kick it away and you kick it with such venom that your whole body goes and you land on the floor. Well, had he done that, he wouldn't have got up for the second save in order to make that save. And had he done it for the second save, similarly, had there been another follow-up, you're then in a bad position. So actually, sometimes just keep it simple. Ball's coming in, big side foot to it. Get yourself set ready for the next one.
It is the Championship rundown. We're going to start with Fulham, who capitulated against Coventry. Yet while he may have conceded four, Paolo Gazzaniga pulled off a remarkable save to deny Victor Gyökeres a hat-trick.
That, I was going to say his name, but you jumped in there before me. No, great save. Beautiful save, I wrote down. And I love these because this is similar to a drill. And I'm sure every goalkeeper listening will have done this drill at some point where you have the small goal on the angle and you have someone that's effectively trying to curl the ball into the far post from an angle. So the coach will stand there and it will just be like a little dinked curl into the far top corner. And you have to turn from the post and then explode to your left or right, wherever it might be, in order to try and either hold it or get fingertips around the post. And it's exactly that. And he times it perfectly. Good set position again, explodes to his left, fingertips, lovely shot of him horizontal in the air. Very, very good save.
Stuart Moore off the bench to bag just his second appearance and all 3 points for Blackpool in their win over Blackburn. A Tyrese Dolan back header clawed out at the top corner.
Brilliant. Really, really happy for him. And I do wonder how many times have two brothers been playing in goal in the Championship at the same time?
That is a very good question.
I don't know the answer. I'm not asking you this and I'm now going to produce a fact. I don't know if that's ever happened before. And credit to Stuart Moore because he's had a bit of a rough journey last couple of years and he was playing a bit for Wealdstone last season, did well on loan there. And I believe he was out of contract for a period of time too. But he's one of these goalkeepers that has a hell of a lot of talent. Of course, with Reading as a kid and he did very, very well there. He was with Luton in a playoff semi-final. He helped them get to the playoff semi-final. So he's got plenty of experience, but hasn't necessarily settled for the last few years. But it does seem like he's settled at Blackpool. Obviously, it's not an easy one to come in for Chris Maxwell. He's done as well as he has. So big credit to him to make a save as good as this at such a crucial time.
I'm going to possibly guess at the Kellys, maybe. I don't think they did, but Alan and Gary from memory. Alan, the more famous, I suppose, of the Kelly brothers, but they were both goalkeepers at the same time. Gary, more of a lower league goalkeeper, I think, but there's a chance, a possibility, maybe they both played perhaps in the same division, maybe not in the Championship.
I wonder if the Anik brothers is another one.
That is another one.
I wonder if they've ever played in the same division at the same time. There you go. Look, if anyone knows, please let us know.
Do. Please let us know. Another clean sheet and a fourth win in five for Luke Southwood. A couple of good saves in Reading's win at Cardiff, but it was more the intelligent bit of goalkeeping that I noticed in this one.
Yeah, the ball that goes over his head, hits the inside of the post, comes back towards him, and a little flick of the wrist just to get it away. Just a nice little diversion. Is that the word? Deflection.
Deflection.
Yeah, lovely little deflection. No, look, huge credit to him. And again, how much difference a goalkeeper can make by coming in, I'm sure we could have this debate all day, but he has come in and Reading have had a real upturn in fortunes and they're sitting pretty now. I think they're 7th or 8th in the league and a team that many thought might struggle this season. But when you talk about introductions and hoping your first few games go well, I can't think of many that have come in and had quite the introduction that Luke Southwood's had. It's been absolutely phenomenal. He's been very, very good at each game, making crucial saves. He looks like he plays with real personality back there, very much a leader at the back, and it's certainly paying dividends for Reading.
Brad Collins with a fine double save from Shea Ojo and Murray Wallace as Barnsley eventually lost to Millwall. And Ben Hamer, a triple save as Derby and Swansea drew a blank. Tom Lawrence losing out on three separate occasions.
Yeah, quite amusing this. And yeah, three solid saves. Wasn't able to hold each of them, but again, made the save, set well, made the save, set well, made the save. And in terms of Brad Collins, really good double save, because I think the first one takes a little nick, which wrong foots him slightly, so he's not able to set and maybe gather the first one, but his recovery is very good, gets a step forward, gets close to the ball, spreads well, and manages to get enough on it to take it behind.
Big game on Friday night too. Stoke beating previously unbeaten West Brom. A lot to talk about in this one. We actually watched this together, didn't we?
We did.
Tough 90 minutes that was. Crikey.
It was.
In each other's company. Yeah. Creepers.
Yeah, I actually found out a little bit about your personal life as well. I asked you a few questions. It was intriguing.
An own goal from Darnell Furlong. You weren't happy with that because of his reaction afterwards. It wasn't given, of course. There was a foul, apparently, on Callum Robinson, wasn't there, from Vrančić. The handball outside his box from Adam Davies. That was quite funny. And both the free kick and the penalty save from Sam Johnston, they were both very impressive.
Yeah, lots of talking points. The first one in particular, Furlong. The reason it bugged me a bit is that I don't really like it when the gestures that are being made are seemingly for the crowd. And this also applies to goalkeepers as well, that he's essentially, what he's done is he's cupped his ear to say, like, I can't hear you. And it's like, well, you can just tell him you can't hear him. You don't need to do that so everybody can see. And then, of course, the commentators then pick up on it and, that he didn't hear him shout. Mustn't have shouted. So it's Sam Johnson's fault. It's like, well, he probably did shout. You could just turn around and be like, I didn't hear you. And in the end, it was a pretty bad header back towards goal. So it was his fault. Now, in the end, it was irrelevant because, of course, the goal was disallowed. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of players and goalkeepers almost throwing teammates under the bus a little bit by kind of making it known to the masses, oh, it's not my fault, it's your fault. That's all that was. And in terms of the other things, yeah, Adam Davis, who was, I thought, very, very solid again. I mean, his clean sheet record, someone said to me the other day, it's more than 1 in 2 for Stoke. I think 30-something games or whatever it is, and I think it's 18 or 19. Just a ridiculous record. And I think he does play with this real calming energy. Really, really calm in everything he does. And this particular moment, it was one of them where he just lost his bearings slightly. He's out wide. He thinks he's just slightly inside. And you can see the way in which he holds the ball and then quickly runs back into the area. But when you see it again, he was a good couple of yards outside of the area. So he had no complaints when it came to taking the booking. And Sam Johnston, I thought, again, was solid. Good save up to his right-hand side, as you mentioned. The penalty is an interesting one in that I actually do think it's a penalty, whereas you don't, which is obviously the fact it's against the goalkeeper. I think we'd normally be the other way around, or certainly me saying it's not. But I just think this goes back to what I've said before. I think if a striker gets it past you and there is that contact, then they can claim it's a penalty. Now, Sam Johnston doesn't actually go in for a tackle. What he's done is he's tried to spread to cover the goal to make sure that no one can kick the ball in the goal. But of course, the player then kicks it miles away. But by doing that, his then movement takes him into Sam Johnston. So unfortunately, it's always going to be given.
Yeah, he's kicking it away from goal.
Yeah.
He's kicking it to the touchline.
Yeah.
That's what's so insane about that penalty. I do, listen, it is a penalty under the laws of the game, but where we've had discussions over the past couple of weeks where a player could be through on goal and takes it around a goalkeeper, like we have spoken about many times, and the goalkeeper comes out and then withdraws at the last second, and the striker goes down, you don't think that is a penalty, but that striker has got more chance of scoring as opposed to Sam Surridge, who's literally booted the ball away, but because he knows the goalkeeper's going to take him out, he's clever. It's contact. Clever play.
Yeah, there's contact. It just makes it a little bit more black and white for me. I think if there is that type of contact and the goalkeeper hasn't touched the ball, then I understand why it's given.
And lastly, Joe Lumley. Oh. You have to feel for him. Credited with an own goal in Middlesbrough's defeat at Hull, but come on.
We've all had these. I know this was discussed, I think you said, on one of the shows as to whether this should really count as an own goal.
It was Colin Murray on Quest. Yeah. He said, I don't think these should be given as own goals for goalkeepers.
Just nothing you can do. It's as simple as that. The ball's fired. I mean, you could argue, does he try and dive for it? But I don't know. I actually think no, because I think if you know you're not going to get there, which he was never ever going to get anywhere near it, then actually by standing up, sometimes if it does hit the post and come back out, you're ready to react to the next one. But the fact that it hits the post and just cannons into him at such speed, there's just nothing that he can do. And it's just so, so unfortunate. Of all the places it could have hit him, of all the places it could have gone after hitting the post, it just went in the very worst place it possibly could.
Okay, before we move on to the best of the rest, it was noted as well that this weekend there appeared to be quite a few goalkeeping changes, didn't there? Managers shifting their number ones. I was having a little look at the stats on this. How many goalkeepers do you think? So we are, what, 7 games in the Premier League, 9, 10, 11 games throughout the EFL that have been played so far this season. How many goalkeepers do you think have been used, considering there are 92 clubs?
92 teams. So I would go, oh, that's a really good question. This must have taken you a while.
Nah, quite quick, to be fair.
Was it? Okay. 92 teams. I think then, what, 1 in 7, 1 in 8 will have maybe had a change, I guess, at some point. Are we talking about cup games as well?
No, just league.
Just
because
league, good.
A goalkeeper change in the cup is pretty normal.
No, I agree with that. I would say that more than 10% of teams have tried another goalkeeper. So I'd say it'd be an extra 20. So I'm going to go 112.
Not too far off, but actually a little bit far off.
Go on.
So 26 in the Premier League.
Yeah.
39 in the Championship.
Wow.
34 in League One.
Yeah.
And 34 in League Two.
Incredible.
133 goalkeepers have been used in league football. I haven't accounted for those who have just come off the bench, but still, that's a lot of goalkeepers.
It's a lot. It's a lot for this time of the season. And I think that what you're seeing now, similar with like a manager, I don't think players are getting as much time as maybe they once did. You know, you think of goalkeepers in the past that seemingly they were always number one. There was never really a threat to their place. I don't think that really applies to anybody now. You know, even David De Gea, after however many seasons of being player of the season, you know, certainly lost his place last season a couple of times to Dean Henderson. So I think that we're seeing that now, and it only takes for a run of bad results. And of course, the goalkeeper tends to be one that will be changed when that is the case. We also find this time of the season, I always think you get to around October and you've had, as you mentioned, certainly in the EFL, you've had the best part of 10 games. It's enough time to make a bit of a judgment as to whether someone is doing well or not so well. The tough thing for a goalkeeper will always be the fact that so much of it seems to be based on things that are out of your control. You know, if you're in a team that are flying high, top of the league, you might not be playing brilliantly yourself, but you're going to keep your place. Whereas you might be doing very, very well in a team that aren't so good, but then it only takes maybe a bad performance where you're at fault for a couple of goals and you may well be the one that's cut for the next game.
Okay, best of the rest.
Yes.
Ben Amos with saves from John Akinde and Robbie McKenzie as Wigan overcame Gillingham at Priestfield. About 430 fans for Wigan. I don't know whether you spotted them in the crowd, in their ponchos, in the pouring rain. Fair play to them.
Amazing. And it was an Amos spread.
It was an Amos spread.
I did notice this as I was watching. I thought that will make Matthew smile. He does enjoy an Amos spread.
Two good saves. Two very good saves.
Yeah, they were two very good saves. Good timing on the first one where he came out on the angle to produce the spread that he did. And the second one, point blank, but again, really good reactions and seemingly seems to have settled in really well there.
Josh Griffiths, again, having praise heaped upon him from the reporters all the time. They love him, don't they? Continuing to perform for Lincoln. Ryans, Broom and Hardy kept at bay for Plymouth, as was Jordan Houghton in the second half. 2-2, though, this one.
Yeah, the two saves he made in the top corner, phenomenal saves, certainly so powerful. You know, we talk about explosive power, you know, that ability to set and really let yourself go into the top corner. And both of these, I know I make this comment probably far too often, but genuinely not many goalkeepers who make these saves, certainly in League One, because I think, you know, with someone of his size, stature, but has the ability, the athleticism and that explosive power, as I mentioned, in order to get up there. I just thought these were two brilliant saves into the top corner.
Scott Flinders with a save from Rotherham's Michael Smith early on, but then unable to hold on to the initial effort, which led to real Grigg tapping home. The Millers beating Cheltenham.
Yeah, I'd be a bit frustrated with that one. Just slightly wrong-footed. Couldn't quite get back on himself. I'm not sure if there was a nick or not. And if there was, then I'm perhaps doing him a bit of a disservice. But the save he did make in the first half was excellent, because it's one where the ball's whipped in and you have to take a step to your left to get yourself back in the centre of your goal, ready for the header. And you're not ordinarily expecting the header to be a glanced header going back on your right. So again, the agility that he showed to get down to his right, big hand round the post, very good.
Wickham and Morecambe contesting a 4-3 thriller at Adams Park. And the boy Kayleth Carl Letheren, maybe questioned for two of the four. Back in, though, he's another one who's back in for Jochel Andresen.
Yeah, he is. Interesting goals here. Even the one that Stockdale conceded was an interesting one in that he seemingly thought the danger had passed, and he's kind of ambling back towards his goal. And the ball then comes in. He's expecting his defence to clear it. They don't. And, of course, he isn't set. And the speed at which the ball goes in, it ends up trickling in. And I feel for him a bit because I just think that he fully assumed that the danger was over and his defence were going to clear it. And the moment they didn't touch it, suddenly there's not a lot you can do and it just rolls past him into the empty net. But, yeah, tough afternoon for Carl Letheren. What I would say is that Wickham are very difficult to play against, certainly in conditions like we've had over the weekend. So when you're getting corners whipped on your head and you've got some of the strikers that Wickham have got that are challenging you over and over and over again, it's one of the toughest asks in football. And I don't care what league you play in, Premier League, Championship, Conference South, doesn't matter. If you're facing that kind of front line, conditions like they were at the weekend, wind, rain, greasy ball, and loads of strikers coming in like they are, it's always going to be tough to deal with. And there was one in particular where this seemed to be the case, the corner that was whipped in on his head, and in the end, it's gone in on the far post. He'll be disappointed with it, but I do think most goalkeepers can show a little bit of empathy towards him.
Joel Dixon with a hugely satisfying penalty save in Bolton's defeat of Shrewsbury. Ryan Bowman going straight down the middle.
He did, and he stood up, and he made a very good save. An interesting save, because it's one where it's gone slightly to his right-hand side, and he's almost just like, he's just effectively put his right hand out and just kind of palmed it away. So it's a really unusual-looking save, but that often happens, I think, when you hold your position down the centre in the way that he did. You set, and sometimes you can't necessarily move your body in order to get two hands to it. So he's done exactly what he should have done, and it was a very good save just to get that right hand to it and palm it to safety.
And finishing, wrapping up the EFL in League Two, the Matt Taylor derby between Exeter and Walsall. Do you remember the last time? Of course you don't remember. I didn't remember. This is just a very quick stat. The last time that two managers who had the same name competed against each other in the same game.
Go on.
It was Fulham and Bristol Rovers in 1978.
Ah.
Bobby Campbell.
There you go.
Faced Bobby Campbell.
Of course he did. Yeah. Of course he did.
Nothing to do with goalkeeping. I just wanted to flag this one because Matt Jay, his third miss in four, he went straight down the middle too. Even though he hit the bar, Carl Rushworth, he still read it.
Yeah, stay still. And I like the fact that we're seeing this more and more because I think a lot of goalkeepers didn't stand still and stay down the middle. Previously, I think that might have been because they might have experienced the sort of criticism that used to be given to goalkeepers. You know, I think of several penalties that have gone in back in the day where they'll be giving goalkeepers stick for not moving. Oh, why didn't he even at least try for it? Well, actually, that was his effort. His effort was to stand still. But of course, that was judged and perceived to be something negative previously, whereas I think now there is a realization that so many goals do go down the middle when it comes to penalties that actually standing still is effectively one of your three choices. So I love the fact that it's being commentated on in a slightly different way, and I love that we're seeing that sort of bravery from so many goalkeepers now.
And Nathan Bishop, a heck of a save from an Ollie Banks header, Mansfield eventually, however, falling to Barrow.
Yeah, very good. Good set and save. In fact, a lot of this is down to the set. The fact that it's headed down in the way that it is, he's got to move so quickly to get something on this. And it's so satisfying to see it then spin just the other side of the post as he gets a good foot, hand, whatever it was that he managed to get on the ball. It's a really good save. Very, very sharp and very important.
It's an interesting loan, this one, isn't it? We saw it with Batsunu last season when top clubs loan their goalkeepers out to clubs that are actually, and who knows what's going to happen at the start of the season, but Rochdale struggling last season with Batsunu, and this season Mansfield not having the best run with Nathan Bishop, who of course is at Manchester United. You look at the flip side of that, Josh Griffiths, who we've mentioned, Cheltenham and now Lincoln doing very well. But if your goalkeeper goes to a club that's struggling, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it somewhere in between?
It could be either. I mean, there's so many examples of goalkeepers that have gone to struggling teams and got player of the season. Similarly, there's so many examples of goalkeepers that have gone to struggling teams and have lost their place quite quickly. So I think with either situation, you're just looking at different lessons that you're going to learn. If you are in a very, very strong, successful team, as Josh Griffiths was certainly last season, then you might not have as much to do. So then the argument for that would be that you're then improving your concentration levels. You know, you're learning how to be ahead, as ridiculous as that sounds. You know, you're going to be winning a lot of games and you've got the pressure of being 1-0 up in the last 5 minutes. Can you continue to do the right things, make the right decisions, or is the situation going to get the better of you? If it's the other way around and you're losing many games quite heavily, you're going to be called upon a lot more, which will mean a lot more great saves, but also a lot more mistakes. How are you going to bounce back from defeat after defeat? A good example this week, I guess, would be Doncaster, for instance, who bounced back from their 6-0 defeat away at Ipswich to then beat MK Dons 2-1. So experiences like that for me, I think, are invaluable, because we've all been there when you've lost a game really heavily and then you're stepping out the next game. Now, whatever level you're playing at, it may feel slightly different than if you're stepping out after having won the previous game. So I think there isn't necessarily a right or wrong answer to this. I just think that with each of these types of loans, you're going to learn something ever so slightly different. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, it is that time of the show again. Now, we've referenced so many clubs on this show, and the truth is we're running out. We don't have many left, but one that Matthew did mention to me, one that he is part of, is the Caravan Club, which James Shea, I'm assuming, is also a member, of course, because James Shea, who has his Golden Glove Award in his... Is it a caravan, Matthew, or...?
I think it's a mobile home, but it's a form of. It's in that bracket.
So what do they call them in America? They're much nicer in America, like the RVs.
Yeah.
I could imagine James Shea. It'd be an RV, wouldn't it? It'd be one of these. Probably got a swimming pool. Anyway, yeah, it's that time of the show. Clean Sheet Club. And we start in the Premier League with Nick Pope. May his clean sheet campaign commence. Tim Krul, may his shutout season start. Ilan Meslier, may his barrage of blanks begin. Robert Sanchez, easy threesy. Aaron Ramsdale, 4 from 5 in all competitions. Into the Championship, Adam Davis, 2 and 3. Bart Biakowski, 2 on the spin. Brees Samba, relishing a revitalised rearguard at Forest. Luke Southwood, very much moving north this term. Ryan Alsop, ooh, Rocky Robin, he's a mighty, mighty goalkeeper to beat. Ben Hamer, 4 and 6 since reclaiming the gloves. Matt Ingram, roaring back into the club. Victor Johansson, 3 and 4. Ben Amos, loving life with the Latics. Gavin Batsunu, perfectly placed at Pompey. Richard O'Donnell, first since the opening day. Luke McGee, sound the klaxon. 5 in a row. Tom King, doing his thing. Paul Farman, really good stuff. Joe Day, back in business. Dean Bouzanis, suitably safe hands for Sutton. And finally, Joseph Anang Zhang.
Very good. Very good, Richard.
I'm not sure it was very good. Well, I felt very uncomfortable reading a lot of them.
Did you?
Yeah.
Any references there?
There was a few, I could tell, but yeah. I don't know what they were.
Ryan Alsop, who Rocky Robin. Remember that? Do you remember that advert?
Are you going to sing it? Or?
Chocolate Block Man. Remember that?
No, I don't at all.
Okay, we won't play it. No. Joseph Anang Zhang?
No.
Zhang.
Yeah, by saying it louder isn't going to make me understand what you're talking about.
I believe it means excellent in Cantonese. And I know that because...
Go on.
You will know this.
Go on.
Wayne's World.
Okay, again, a film I haven't seen for a long, long time.
You have seen it, though.
I have, of course. Yeah, but okay, like, good. What, 25 years ago?
Okay, yeah, around that. Yeah. Okay, the table?
Yeah, do it.
Lovely. So, top of the pile, we have a newbie.
Go on.
We have a newbie. With 6 from 11 games, Victor Johansson.
Well, there you go.
He's right up there. In second spot, Edison remains, 5 in 7. And then in third, we have 5 goalkeepers all contesting third spot with 5 in 10. Ben Amos has now moved up. Cam Dawson has moved up. Lucas Kovalan, Liam Roberts, and Luke McGee has nipped in there. I believe his 5 have all come in the last 5 games.
Wow.
So there's just no telling what can happen in the Clean Sheet Club.
It's going to be fascinating. I guess the question is, will Johansson be victorious?
Finishing with one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper keeper.
So we're actually going a bit further back into the Champions League games from the week. So the moment has passed, but I just wanted to flag it because he got a bit of stick, Diogo Costa, the Porto goalkeeper, who has taken the number one spot from Agustín Marchesín, who was very good last season and has been good for the club for quite a while. He's only 22 years old, his first proper season as a number one. And he's playing okay this season from things that I've read. But in this game against Liverpool, where Porto were battered 5-1, he was hammered on the radio, on the TV, in articles, online, everywhere, that he had a nightmare, that he was committing howler after howler. I personally thought, having watched the game, having watched the goals, I don't know if he was hugely at fault for all of them, but there was one in particular. And that was the third goal, I think, the third or the fourth from Roberto Firmino.
Yeah, I think it was the fourth. And yeah, look, it's an error. Ball's come down the side. He's trying to play on the front foot. He's trying to be very proactive. And we're seeing a lot of goalkeepers play like this, the whole sweeper keeper, certainly Manuel Neuer. In fact, Sam Johnston, good example this season, playing so high. But it was one that he was never, ever going to get. And by the time he's committed, he's a good 40 yards from goal. It's just what happens thereafter, because the ball isn't then fired into the net. It's almost as if Firmino has done it in such a way, has struck it in such a way that he knew it was always going to be just enough to get it into the goal. So you see Costa galloping back towards goal. And let's be honest, is there a goalkeeper out there that can sprint in a fashion that actually looks quite good? I don't think there is.
Do you know what I want to see? I don't know whether we've said this before, but you know how before the League Cup finals back in the 90s...
I know what you're going to say.
You used to have
a mascot.
No.
I thought you could have a goalkeeper's race and a mascot's race at the same time.
No, I mean, they used to, bizarrely, have a 100-metre race on the turf at Wembley before the League Cup finals. I remember one in particular when John Williams, you remember him, the flying postman, he was at Swansea in Coventry, and he won it. But they haven't done that for years, and I would love them to do it for goalkeepers, to see just how fast a goalkeeper could run, or indeed to find out who the fastest goalkeeper is. Perhaps with our planned day of this goalkeeper combine that we're going to have at the end of the season, we could do that.
That would be great. Who do you think would be the fastest Premier League goalkeeper?
I don't know. I mean, he looked quite rapid, didn't he, this Diogo Costa? But most goalkeepers, like say, when they run, no.
Well, it's not something that you do over that sort of distance ordinarily. And I felt for him here in that he did get going and he did actually gather a little bit of pace. And so frustratingly for him, he was actually very, very, very close to making the save. And I felt a bit sorry for him in that the commentary, they were absolutely, even the fact he was chasing it back and your commentators are saying, what's he doing? What's he doing? Well, what was he meant to do? Of course, he's going to try and chase it back and try and keep the ball out the goal. But yeah, tough moment. You could see his body language as soon as he'd conceded it. We've all been there. Wants the ground to swallow him up. His face said everything. And I did actually feel quite sorry for him.
Okay, Richard, that is us for this week. International week now. So we'll see what happens next week. The games are all a bit higgledy-piggledy, aren't they?
There are. There'll be plenty of League One, League Two. Although even a lot of them, I believe, are called off due to internationals as well. So we shall see where we are next week.
Thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.
Wait.